midst of the church season where all the emphasis is on prosperity. Because the yes you doesn't feel good. On the one hand, yes, Jonah was rescued, but God, isn't there another way you can rescue me besides having a fish swallow me? One of the things that God does in his yes yous is very often he leads us into a very, very difficult place. It amazes me. I look at Luke chapter 4 sometimes, where it says the Spirit of God led Jesus into the wilderness. And I say to myself, I don't need the Spirit of God to lead me into the wilderness. I can find that bad boy on my own, you know. I know where the wilderness is. I don't need the Spirit of God to take me there. But what happens is that very often God takes us to places where we can be taught. Remember, he drags your butt through some stuff. And what happens is very often we try to, when we get in the belly of the fish, we ask God to get us out. When in reality, it was God who put us there in the first place. When I see Spirit of the Lord and wilderness in the same sentence, for me, the preposition is out, not in. And yet God takes us to these wilderness places. God takes us into the belly of the fish. God takes us to dry places. God takes us to difficult places. I heard somebody once say, Jesus didn't come to get you out of trouble. He came to get in trouble with you. Another way to put that is sometimes God fixes things for you, but more often he fixes you for things. We want God to change our circumstance. We want God to change the things that we're going through, but those things that we're going through are the places where he blesses us and where we meet him. When my enemies show up, I want God to wipe out my enemies. Haven't you ever asked God to get rid of your enemies? Look at me like you. All liars have their place in the lake of fire. Yeah. Lord, you need to fix that one. You need to change that one, Lord. But David said when his enemy shows up, God shows up and prepares him a table in the presence of his enemies. God doesn't remove the enemy sometimes. Sometimes God allows the enemy to watch you get blessed. But you need to not be focused on the enemy. You need to be focused on the table being prepared. Jonah is in the fish. This is his yes, you. And he discovers that God is even present in the fish. He's not in church. He doesn't have a praise and worship team charging the atmosphere. I don't know where they got that from. That phrase bothers me. 30-second commercial. That bothers me. Why you got to charge the atmosphere? Everybody can, oh, I got to get mine. See, we're back to you got to get yours again, right? That consumerist stuff. See, you don't charge the atmosphere. The Bible says enter his gates with thanksgiving. It doesn't say enter with your burdens. Enter his courts with praise. You shouldn't have to charge the atmosphere. The only reason that praise and worship has to charge the atmosphere, you didn't come right. That was for free. And if you want biblical support for it, when you have time, start at the 120th Psalm and go through Psalm 134. And you will see at the top of each one of those psalms the phrase, a psalm of degrees or a psalm of ascent. You will see that inscription. Those were the psalms that folks sang on the way to the temple. They didn't sing those in the temple. They were charging the atmosphere while they were on their way so that when they got there. See, what happens is, see, you listen to Jay-Z on the way to church. You fussing with folk on the way to church. You ticked off on the way to church, and then you depend on church to do for you what God wants to do with you before you get there. That's free. Jonah finds God outside of church. He finds him in the belly of the fish. And this is a very difficult place. He says in verse 5, the waters compassed me about even to the soul, and the depth closed round about me. The weeds were wrapped around my head. This is a difficult place. I'm going to come back to that in a minute. I went down to the bottom of the mountains. The earth with her bars was about me forever. Yet thou hast brought up my life from corruption, O Lord my God. In the midst of a difficult place. Not an inconvenient place. You know, there's a difference between a burden and an inconvenience. A lot of us, how many of you have ever said you're hungry? Right? Oh, I'm hungry. No, you're not. You're just inconvenienced. You're used to eating 4 or 5 times a day. Now, there's some places on the planet where we can show you hungry. Hungry like I haven't eaten for 2 days. Well, what you is, you've been inconvenienced because your body is used to being fed more than it needs. If you can't say amen, say ouch. See, this is not inconvenience. This is real difficulty. This is having your butt dragged through the sand. Verse 7, when my soul fainted within me, it was too much for me. It was too much for me. Now that, that's a negative confession. Don't make any negative confessions, right? You got to always have a positive confession. I'm too blessed to be stressed. How you doing today? Blessed and highly favored. So what? I didn't ask you, were you blessed and highly favored? I said, how you doing? How you doing? I'm not so good today. Right? How many of you ever had a bad day? A bad week? A bad month, a bad year. And then some well-meaning Christian says, oh, don't confess that. Don't confess that. Shut up. Paul said, I will glory in my afflictions. There's nothing wrong with talking about how you really feel. God knows how you really feel. God can meet you when you're honest with him about how you really feel. My soul fainted. The yes, you was so overwhelming that I could not take it anymore. Elijah goes out into the wilderness and says, it's enough. I'm ready to die. Don't say that. Don't say that, Elijah. That's a negative confession. He felt like dying. You ever felt like dying? Sometimes you just can't take it anymore. And you know what's so amazing about it? You feel worse than you really are. Because your feelings can trip you up. You feel worse than you really are. You really don't feel like dying. You just don't like the way you feel. You feel terrible. You know, Elijah, he said, I want to die. I want to die. Well, no, he really didn't. If you read the whole story, the reason he was in the wilderness, he was running away from somebody who wanted to kill him. If he really wanted to die, all he'd do was stay where he was. You know, so he's got some drama issues going, right? Elijah's got some drama issues, but so do you and so do I. And sometimes you just feel like telling God, I can't take this anymore. And the yes, you is very often a place where you feel like giving up. It's all right to feel like giving up. Because the reality is, listen to this, the reality is when your soul faints and you cry out to God, when you tell God you quit, it takes faith. Did you hear what I said? It takes faith to quit on God. I found that out. 1992, I was mad at God. I was mad at God, upset with God. My soul was fainting. I was mad at God, could not take it anymore. I said, that's it, Lord. I quit. I'm not preaching anymore. I'm not going to church anymore. In fact, I'm an atheist. I don't believe in you anymore. I got in my car and I'm riding down the street. About 15 minutes later, God said, if you don't believe in me anymore, who were you talking to when you said that? It takes faith to quit on God because you believe there's a God to quit on. It takes faith to quit on God because you believe there's a God to quit on. It takes faith to be angry at God because you believe there's a God to be angry with. My soul fainted. He's being honest. When my soul fainted, look what he says. My soul fainted within me. I remembered the Lord. Now, you've got to understand what the word remember means in Hebrew. It doesn't mean to be aware of. Like we use the word, oh, I remembered my socks today. Okay? You ever forget your socks? You know, oh, man, no socks. I wonder what's wrong with my feet. It's cold. It's not like that. The term remember in Hebrew means to treat the past as if it were in the present. Hear me, this will help you out. It means to treat the past as if it were the present. To treat the past as if it were the present. In other words, what Jonah did was he thought back to when he was close to God and then began to treat God like he was close again. Now, one of the reasons that'll help you out is people always say, well, you know, can I forgive without forgetting? You know, people do that kind of stuff. You know, I'll forgive, but I'll never forget. Oh, you haven't really forgiven because you haven't forgotten. No. See, when you forgive somebody, you still remember what they did, but you still are aware of what they did, but you don't bring it into the present. So I'm clear what you did to me. Yeah, I forgive you, but I'm clear about what you did to me. And I may have to act differently so that you don't do that to me again. I can forgive without forgetting. God doesn't forget. Remember, God says, their sins I will remember no more. Well, it's not like God forgot. Gee whiz, did he sin? I better go check the book. You know, no. See, God is aware, but he doesn't treat your past sins, like Brother Mason said. He doesn't treat your past sins as if they were in the present. So you can forgive somebody and still be aware of what they did. The problem that you have is that you begin to think about what they did to you, and then you bring that into the present. There's a word for that. The word is called resentment. And the word resentment literally in Latin means to feel again. In other words, you did something to me 20 years ago, and I feel the same way today as I did when you did it. In fact, probably worse. When Jonah says, I remembered, he went back into his past and recalled something about how God had blessed him, and he brought that presence of God into the present. And now that he has God with him, now that he understands that God is with him, now that he remembers God, he's treating the past blessings of God and the past presence of God as if it were in the present, because it is in the present. He has discovered God in the fish. He makes the observation. He says, my prayer came in unto thee, into thine holy temple. He's in the fish, but he's in the temple. He's in the fish, but he's in the temple. He understands that the temple is in the fish. You don't have to go to church to be in the temple. You don't have to have praise and worship and video and all that other kind of stuff to be in the presence. If you needed all that to be in the presence, we never would have got the book of Revelation. John is on a lonely island. He has no praise and worship team to charge the atmosphere. He has no preacher to preach the gospel. He has no deacon with a tape recorded prayer. I'm God said. He has none of that stuff, right? He doesn't have any of that. It's just him on the island, dry, lonely, but he's in the presence. He's in the presence of God. And in the presence of God, here's a revelation that comes to him. They that observe lying vanities forsake their own mercy. They who observe lying idols, false idols, forsake their own mercy, forfeit their own blessing. He realizes that he's amongst this crowd, that he held on to some idols that kept him from receiving the favor of God. Now, part of what we're trying to do here is to figure out, what does it mean for us to become leaders? What needs to be transformed? Jonah had to let go of some things. He had to let go of his old notion of where God was. Jonah had to let go of a whole lot of things. But what do you have to let go of in your yes, you experience? Remember we talked about the things with the fingernail marks on it? Can I give you a list of things that I think we need to let go of in the yes, you? And I'm going to try to get underneath some of the surface stuff. Bruce's poem was right on. I'm going to try to get underneath that poem, try to get underneath the video we've been looking at, and see some stuff that makes the surface stuff possible. Lying vanity number one, choice. Choice. The idolatry of choice. I can do what I want. We even worship that way. We go to a church that sings the music that we like. I ain't going there no more. They sing on them old Negro spirituals. I ain't no slave. I'm blessed and highly favored. They sing anthems. That church is dry. Woo, they sound like opera. I ain't going in there. You know, there's some churches, and I don't know if you've ever seen one. There's some churches where, like, they have the gospel choir on one Sunday and the senior choir the other Sunday, and some folk only come on senior choir Sunday, and some folk only come on gospel choir Sunday. You know, there's some young people that only come when it's their choir singing. You're walking down the hallway and there's a bulletin board and some preacher you've never heard of is coming. And you say, I'm not going to hear it. Then you see Ty Tripp. Ooh, I'm going to be there. Now, you haven't prayed about it. You haven't asked the Lord. See, I'm not necessarily talking about the choice to sin. I'm talking about choice itself. We walk around like we have a choice about everything. And we do not have to submit ourselves to the Lordship of Christ. You go to the church of your choice. You shop at the supermarket of your choice. You don't pray when you shop. That's why you're broke. How would your life be different if you prayed before you shopped? If you prayed before, Lord, as I approach this mall. Your finances would be different. But we worship choice. I'm going to marry who I want and then ask God to bless it. Y'all know that. Lord, send me somebody. Send me him. You know how I know choice is a problem on marriage issues? You watch television, right? You're watching Oprah or Ricky Lake or one of them folk, and here comes somebody. I know. I'm old, okay? I'm old. Don't make me get Phil Donahue up in here. I'm old. And I'm glad I'm old, because the alternative is I'd be dead, okay? But you're watching one of these talk shows, and here comes some woman from a third world country who's in an arranged marriage. Ooh, that's a shame. She got to marry who they make her marry. That ain't right. Why isn't it? In this country, we get to choose who we want, and half the marriages end up in divorce. So obviously, there's something. We're not doing that good a job picking for ourselves. Everybody in the Bible arranged marriages. The only guy that got to pick his own. Now, Samuel picked it. He didn't get to pick his own. He picked his own and messed up. But Jacob got to pick his own. He had to work for 14 years. You had to work for 14 years to get with that. Now, so you see the assumption that I have a right to marry who I want to marry. Ain't nobody going to tell me I can't marry nobody. Pastor said he's going to pray before he marries us. Shoot, I just go on down to the wedding chapel. You know what I'm saying? The assumption that I have all of these rights is, here's what it is. We call it a culture of entitlement. And the church falls into that by painting God as someone who will bless your entitlements. I'm entitled to a house. I'm entitled to a good job. I'm entitled to a Bentley or a BMW. I'm entitled. I deserve it. I worked hard. I got A's. I'm entitled. You've got choice. You've got entitlement. Efficacy. Another idol. Efficacy. Efficacy. That's a big word for what works. What works. See, people don't come to church anymore for what's true. They come for what works. Everything is about application. Apply these principles and God will bless you. Name it, claim it, blab it, grab it. You can have what you say, right? Formula. God is obligated to do what you tell him to do. Ho, 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 ho. If you use the right formula. What works? People come to church because they need this, they need that. I need this, I need that. What works? Don't talk to me about truth. Don't talk to me about redemption. Don't talk to me about doctrine. Tell me how to find a husband. Tell me how to raise my kids. Tell me how to be saved, sanctified, and single. Tell me how to this, how to that. I tell the students at Howard, don't ask me no how questions. I will not answer how questions. Because Americans ask how questions because they want an easy way out. They want a formula to follow instead of a father to follow. That's an idol. That's an idol. This notion of efficacy. What works? What works? God is bigger than what works. Sometimes you do it God's way and it doesn't work. They killed Jesus. It didn't work. Somebody said, oh, but he got up on the third day. No, he didn't. Read your Bible. Ooh. Jesus didn't get up on the third day. God raised him on the third day. He was vindicated. He did it God's way and got killed, and then God vindicated him by raising him. Sometimes you do it God's way and it doesn't work, but then God vindicates you afterwards. You hear the difference? Stop looking for what works. Sometimes it doesn't work. Our chapter's not growing. Our chapter's not growing. Jesus lost 380 members. Paul says that he appeared to 500 members, right, after the resurrection. How many folk were in the upper room? 120? I don't know where the other 380 were. Probably home watching T.D. Jakes. Playing wine and CDs and having brunch. What works? That's an idol. That's an idol. God is not concerned about what works. He's concerned about what's true. Celebrity. Celebrity. Brother can't make it unless he's a ball player or a rap star. A whole lot of brothers make it that aren't rap stars and aren't athletes. They're just not famous. They're just not famous. You have African-American professors in some of your schools. They're not famous. But we all want to be famous. We all want to be noticed. We want celebrity. We want the room to stop when we come in. We say we want to make a difference, but we really want to make a difference so we'll be noticed. I'm just talking to me today. Y'all listening in. Celebrity. Being noticed, being seen, being worshipped. And the church is not helping because we're turning our preachers into celebrities. You got posters with preachers and gospel artists, and they're all got the celebrity poles. And then folk want to go hear them. Everybody wants to go hear them, but nobody wants to follow them. See, it's good to follow a celebrity preacher because they have no authority over your life. See, I can watch a celebrity preacher or listen to a celebrity musician and then go live however I want to live because they have no authority over me. I can go join a big church because nobody will know who I am, and I can go live however I want. And after all, while I'm there, I'm being fed. We didn't even talk about money yet. And the reason we didn't talk about money, as an idol, because I want to dig under it and I want to go underneath that, because the real idol there is material. It's the money, what the money will buy, what the money says to you. If I dress a certain way, what does that communicate to you? If I drive a certain car, what does that communicate to you? If I have gold all up in my mouth, what does that say to you? Okay? I'm trying to communicate something to you. When I dress in a certain manner, like some of the women in the video, what am I trying to say? I'm worshiping material, whether it's money or whether it's the physical body. One of the saddest people I know is a woman who was a beauty queen whose husband left her after she'd contracted multiple sclerosis and discovered that the only reason he loved her was because she was fine. And when her muscles started to go, he went along with them. We worship the material. We worship the external. We worship what we can touch. We worship style. We worship style. A certain kind of lifestyle makes you somebody. And I don't want to let go of these things. Now, in fact, we worship this stuff so much that what we do is, see, what the church does is, these young people now, you know, they gotta have upbeat music. You know, we gotta have hip hop in the church. We gotta be relevant. Come on. You don't have to be relevant. You gotta be truthful. You can be relevant and not truthful. You listen to some of the songs we sing. This is just me. Some songs I just don't like because I'm old. Other songs I don't get. Like Stomp. I don't get Stomp. And because I'm old, I'll be honest with you. Now, I know some of my other folks that in my age bracket, this doesn't happen to you, but I'm when they start doing Stomp, I'm thinking George Clinton. I am. I mean, I'm like one nation under a groove, right? That's where I ain't thinking about the Lord. But we got to be relevant. The young people won't come to church if we're not relevant. No, the young people won't come to church because their parents won't bring them. And sometimes when the parents do bring them, the parents act like fools and act like hypocrites. And the kids say, well, it ain't doing nothing for you. We need relevant youth-based worship. No, you need God. You need God. And God can speak through an anthem. God can speak through excitement. Just because it's loud doesn't mean it's God. It's got to be loud if it's God. You know, we got to pray loud. We got to preach loud. We got to sing loud. Make a joyful noise. Well, sometimes you're supposed to just worship. Elijah was all into the loud stuff. Elijah had seen God move in fire. He had seen God move in all these powerful ways. But when he was in the wilderness, God came to him in a still, small voice. He looked for the wind. No God. Looked at the fire. No God. Looked at the earthquake. No God. But in the still small voice, God is not always loud. In fact, sometimes I want church to be loud so I can't hear God. I don't want to be changed. I want to be excited. I don't want to be transformed. I want to be entertained. I don't want to be different. I want to be happy. And as long as I hold on to those lying vanities, those lying idols, I miss my own blessing. Then in verse 9, he says, I will sacrifice unto thee with the voice of thanksgiving. I will pay that I have vowed. Salvation is of the Lord. He's been transformed. The fish spits him out. He's been changed. He's been in the presence of God in this horrible situation, but it has changed him. It has transformed him. Being in the presence of God should change you. That's why we said yesterday, we're not here to be fed. We're here to be in the presence of God. If you get in the presence of God, God will change you and make you influential. Isaiah 58, God addresses people who've been in church. They've been worshiping. They've been fasting. They've been praying. And God says, I reject your fast. I reject your fast because you obviously weren't fasting to get close to me because you haven't changed. In fact, if anything, you're grumpier now that you're hungry. You're walking around all shriveled up. You're walking around angry. There's arguments between you. If you had really been fasting and gotten in my presence, you would have been so transformed that you would go out and loose the bonds of wickedness. You would be involved in transforming society, letting the oppressed go free. You'd be involved in working in prison ministry and working with AIDS patients and working with the less fortunate and helping the poor. If you had really been in my presence, instead of asking God for a new car, you'd give somebody a ride in the Humpty that you got. Every church fan represents 15 Christians too lazy to give somebody a ride home. Praying for an upgrade from hoopty to Hummer. Even God ain't going to give you no cars. You won't give nobody a ride home. You're too busy trying to get in the Red Lobster. Going to serve. Old Country Buffet. I wish Rev give the benediction. It's going to be crowded. Is that just making any sense? Y'all hear what I'm saying? Give somebody a ride home. Do something with what you have. Make the sacrifice. Be late for Red Lobster. Miss the start of the football game. Come on, bro. Miss kickoff. Dwayne Thomas was a running back for the Dallas Cowboys who got beat by the Eagles on Sunday. Yeah. 44-6, you know. Dwayne Thomas had just won the MVP of the Super Bowl. And they asked him, how does it feel to be MVP of the Super Bowl, the ultimate game? And Dwayne Thomas said, if it's the ultimate game, how come they're going to play it again next year? There's only one ultimate. There'll be another football game. There'll be another football season. There'll be another Red Lobster. There'll be another Country Buffet. Our priorities require a level of sacrifice and letting go of choice, even with our fingernail claws, even with the fingernail scratches. Letting go of some of the things that we've held dear. Not just material, but things like what works, things like choice, things like style, things like celebrity. Letting go of those things so that we might obtain the mercy of God. We're going to be spending some time in prayer this morning. The prayer ministry is going to lead us. And God is going to take us through a tour of the vanities and the idols and of the false worship and the false fasting. And he's going to help us to see some things that we need to let go of. And it's going to take a certain kind of atmosphere to do that. It won't be loud. It won't be exciting. And in fact, this is how Jonah described it. Waters encompassed me about. The depth closed me about. Weeds were wrapped around my head. It's going to feel like that for some of us. But the promise is that if you remember the Lord and bring the past blessing into the present, your prayer will come unto him and into his holy temple, and you'll find yourself saying, salvation is of the Lord.